Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast, Untrimmed Twin Pack, just $4.99 per pound. Signature Farms Boneless Skinless Chicken Breasts, Thighs or Wings, buy one get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Progresso Soup, 18 to 19 ounce selected varieties, buy two get four free when you buy six. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Yeah, you just heard the end of the Ranger game there. They are in free fall. That would have been a good win for the New York Rangers. Up 3-0 against a Dallas Stars team that is, you know, playoff team out west. Would have been a solid victory back, you know, after winning a game against Chicago to put back-to-back wins up 3-0. And defensively, they just have letdown after letdown. And this team is just, I mean, as you heard Sam say, and again, I feel bad for Sam, this being his last year and watching the team implode like this. But defensively, they are just brutal right now. Quick has done a good job, but in the absence of Igor, but we know all the faults of this team, and defensively is some of the biggest, but I mean, the guys are just are falling apart. I mean, obviously, Zibanejad and his play this year, but just a brutal, bitter loss, because it's one of those losses that, I mean, look, they've been losing a lot. So it's one of those losses where it's a frustrating loss, but it's a frustrating loss because of it. It felt like it could have been a very positive win. Like, you go up 3-0 and hold on to that game and beat a very good, solid, playoff-bound, you know, Dallas Stars team, and suddenly you put a couple wins together and you're feeling good about yourself. That's what's frustrating about this. It was an opportunity for the Rangers. Now, they do get a point. It happened in overtime, but it's an opportunity to feel good about themselves, and they blow it. And now, between that and the Knicks falling apart, everyone's so quick to have the Knicks falling apart. The Knicks have lost three games in a row. They haven't played well for the last three games, and they seem tired, especially like when you see the defense they played against an Orlando Magic team that was down their top four starters, and you see the inability to shoot over the last, you know, this game in particular, they were brutal, shooting 18% from behind the arc. But over the last three losses, the three-point shooting has gone down from a team that, you know, has shot the ball very well this year. It speaks to legs. And if you look at it with the bench right now, the minutes are up for everybody over this time last year. And that's going to be the question anytime a Knicks team goes through a bump like this. And clearly when it's defense and 3-point shooting that are what's suffering, that's easy to point to the minutes. And we know how Tibbs runs it. We know the short rotation he has, and you're still waiting, you know, on obviously the big man coming back from injury, so the bench will get a little bit deeper. But right now, Tibbs has got to find a way to win games, or, you know, while still figuring out how to get this team ready for the postseason. So we'll see. But I wouldn't call them, I don't think they're in major trouble. I don't think it's a major issue. I don't think they're, even after the comments from Josh Hart, who is the glue of the team and the heart of the team, pun intended, even after his comments about not having our own agendas and stuff, like, I don't think there's a real, I don't know if he's just trying to send a message to a couple of guys or just, you know, put it out there, but I don't sense that there's a real, I mean, they just went on a 9-game winning streak. I don't think there's an issue inside the room or inside the team at all. I think they are together. I think they were down cat and they were a little tired. And the minutes thing is always going to be a question with the Tibbs team. 888-808-1019, but I'll be honest, and, you know, this can't continue because I got to do this. I haven't seen the last Knick game. I didn't see this Ranger game because I don't have MSG. I got to figure it out. Got to buy the dumb app. so mad about this. Fix it. How much money do you need? Can't some of the congestion tax just go to MSG or Optimum or whoever needs the money? I'd rather have that. The $230 it costs me every morning extra to get in here. And thankfully, it's just that in these hours. Thankfully. Seeing people I haven't seen in the morning anymore because people are trying to get in before the 5-hour peak, the 5 a.m. peak. But can't that money go to MSG or Optimum and just make sure I can watch my Knicks and Rangers? This is getting crazy. And speaking of MSG, best wishes to John Giannone, who announced on television today that he's going through a cancer diagnosis. So I've been personally touched by cancer, lost my father to cancer. It sounds like he announced that he had prostate cancer and that the prognosis is very well, which if caught early is very typical of prostate cancer. So we've done a lot of research there, but hey, go get checked, as we find out every year at the baseball games when the guy comes and does the broadcast and reminds us it's just a simple test, get tested. But John Giannone going through it right now. Best of luck to him and best wishes to him and his family, and hopefully he'll get through it just fine, still working, so hopefully everything goes well for him. But I need my MSG back. I need to see John on a regular basis. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Philip in Jamaica, Queens. What's up, Philip?
Hello, thank you for taking my call. Always great to talk to you. Before, I want to get to a Nick point.
Sure.
Exactly what you were talking about. But I came up with an idea about a baseball award. I want your opinion.
A baseball award? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Okay.
What do you think of a general manager, the best general manager award? Because the general manager in baseball is very important. He puts the players on the team. So what do you think about, like, Cashman getting the best general manager of the year award?
Well, they do.
I don't know if they have that.
They do. They have MLB Best Executive of the Year award, I think. Is that the name? That's the name of the award, Executive of the Year, which is pretty much the GM of the... They do. Yes, they do. Last year,
I didn't know that.
Last year, Matt Arnold of the Milwaukee Brewers was named MLB Executive of the Year.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
There you go. It's such a good idea. Somebody already thought of it.
Someone thought of it.
There you go.
But I want to make a point of the Knicks, exactly what you were talking about, with the minutes played. The Knicks are probably the top of the league of the most minutes play, and I like Tibbs as a coach. He's a great coach of the Knicks. When will he learn that if he keeps playing the players and don't give them a rest, they're going to lose stamina when the playoffs come? So what do you think is going to happen when the playoffs? Do you think it's going to be the same thing last year? And there were a lot of freak injuries last year.
Yeah.
Like Brunson broke his wrist. And do you think Tibbs is going to change his way? Or do you think it's going to be the same as last year? Because I think it's going to affect the playoffs.
Last year they really just fell apart because of injuries and you know, some of it was minutes. I don't know if OG Anunoby, you know, hamstring issue could be related to minutes. But I saw this from Ian Begley. Last season, Jalen Brunson led the New York Knicks in minutes per game at 35.4. He ranked 14th in the NBA. Through 37 games this season, New York has three players ranked within the top seven in minutes per game. Four players within the NBA's top six in distance traveled, and four players within the NBA's top seven of total minutes. So last year, Brunson led the Knicks, and it was 14th in the league. This year, they have three in the top seven. Guys are playing more minutes this year. The bench was a little bit deeper last year. They've had, obviously, injuries with the bench, but you're going to have to figure it out. Because, listen, come playoff time, I don't think Tibbs is going to change. I would expect a tight rotation come playoff time. It's getting them there. And right now, the minutes are up over last year. And you have to figure it out. Now, they went on a 9-game winning streak. I don't think they're in major trouble, and I still think they're a team that can win the whole damn thing. But, yeah, he's got to find a way to massage it a little bit better. I mean, again, that's the perfect way to put it. Ian Begley did it last year. Brunson was the Knick leader in minutes per game, and he was ranked 14th in the NBA. This year, they have three guys in the top seven. Now, it's through the first 37 games of the year, and they're down in their bench, but that can't continue. You can't have three guys in the top seven. Steve in Bayside. What's up, Steve?
What's up, Chris?
What's up,
man? You know, only Scott Boras could use an albatross contract like Prince Fielder, the type of contract that gets a GM fired as a benchmark. Only Scott Boras would have the audacity to do something like
that. No, I know. Well, I mean, listen, because that's what he's telling you. He's the best power hitter. He's, you know, I mean, they're comparable players in many ways. But yes, the idea that that contract would be on the table today when it's not even, I mean, it's not even close. Some of the better first basemen in the last couple of years haven't gotten those numbers. I mean, Olsen with the Braves didn't get those numbers. Like, I just don't see how they could possibly be going on that.
Even to bring a contract like that up, I don't think serves your client's interest. I mean, I just think it's, yeah.
Maybe not. Not if he wants to be a Met, for sure.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, again, contracts. And Dombrowski had a habit of signing those contracts.
Yeah.
You know, he's had a habit of, well, winning World Series, to be fair. Leaving.
I was just going to say, he does have that nasty habit of winning. So, I mean, but yes, you're right. You're right. And that was a terrible contract, and he's known for spending money. When you bring in a guy like that, you know what you're trying to do. You're trying to spend money. That's what he does.
Yeah, and the Red Sox are just coming out of it, out of the Dombrowski era financially.
Right, they bought in Bloom. That was a disaster, and now they've moved on, and we'll see. Looking like maybe they'll spend some money now. They've been linked to a couple of bigger contracts. Bregman seems like Boston's a very strong possibility.
Yeah, I mean, Boston, by the way, is the team that I think the Yankees could, if they're like a year ahead of schedule, if they're one of those teams, they could pose the biggest threat to the Yankees this offseason. I'm very surprised that the Orioles haven't done much.
They haven't really done anything. I'm very surprised that the Orioles, and what we heard with this new ownership group, they're going to spend money, they're going to be dangerous. They traded for the starting pitcher, they traded for Burns, and then let him go. Like, well, I don't know. Like, why would they do that? And, like, they didn't even get in the mix for it. They're not in the mix for Santander. They're bringing in Tyler O'Neill, and, like, that's it. And then a 35-year-old pitcher from Japan. Like, that's it.
You know, look, if you follow finance at all, David Rubenstein is a very wealthy guy, but he's a very conservative guy. I wasn't expecting him to be another Steve Cohen. He does a lot of, you know, podcasts and stuff like that on Bloomberg and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Anyway. On to the Yankees. I think that the way that you're looking at the team when you say the plan B sucks and all that.
Yes.
I think that the way you're looking at it is the reason why you come to that conclusion. Look for first base. That was just a free agent signing where you swapped out, Goldie for Rizzo. And by the way, I think that Ben Rice will probably play 40 games. They'll probably get 40 games at catcher and 40 games at first base.
Wow, I don't know. I would be surprised if he plays that many games as catcher. I mean, I don't think he's going to be the backup catcher. That's a lot of games at catcher. But, I mean, he might play some at catcher, but...
Well, I mean, they did trade away Trevino. So.
Yeah, but they have other options. I doubt very much he'll be the backup catcher, backup first baseman, and have that kind of role. But I do think, whether it's him or somebody else, I agree. I think Paul Goldschmidt, who played 152 games last year. At his age, I think the Yankees, considering how they do business, are going to try and convince him that playing somewhere around 135 is going to be better for him.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I definitely think there's going to be 30 games or so available at first base this year, 100%.
Well, maybe 40 is a little aggressive.
Not 30, 40. That's not crazy. The 40 and at first and at catcher sounds aggressive to me, but 40 at first base, maybe a little aggressive, but right around there, 30 games or so.
Yeah, and they think that they'll get the most out of Goldie that
Correct.
Way.
Correct. I agree.
Especially considering his age. But look, just remove first base just for that purpose. Right. And even,
well, it's an upgrade. It's an upgrade. They're up there. They were the worst offensive production team in Major League Baseball last year at first base. That's going to be an upgrade.
Yes. So there's no doubt about that.
No
and
doubt.
Even the Trevino trade for the reliever, De Los Santos, just put that aside. Let's pose this as a trade. Team X gets Juan Soto, Nestor Cortez, Cody Poteet, and Caleb Durbin. And the Yankees get in return Max Fried, Devin Williams, and Cody Bellinger. Mm-hmm. Who would you say won that trade?
Juan Soto.
No, Juan Soto is the best player in going either way.
No, that,
which team would you say won the trade?
It doesn't necessarily work like that because I think Juan Soto and Devin Williams could have still absolutely been the offseason. Like, I don't think they were.
Brian Cashman disagrees with you. And we've talked
Why?
About that.
Why is Brian Cashman
came out and said.
Said what?
Brian Cashman came out and said that he would not have made the Devin Williams trade if he wasn't dealing from a position of strength with his starting rotation. He said that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. I still think they could have made that Devin Williams trade, but maybe not. You're right, I guess. They definitely wouldn't have done free. They would have done something. We don't know what the other move would have been because they still would have had some money to move. They would have done something. I don't know what it would have been, but it might not have been Devin Williams. I still think it could have been, but you're right. That's fair. But still, I would still say yes, Juan Soto. Juan Soto, Juan Soto helped carry them to a World Series title. He's one of the great American League championships.
You're getting top of the rotation type starter in Fried.
Yeah.
Starting center fielder, yeah. And you're trading away Juan Soto and a bunch of spare parts? Come on.
I still take Juan Soto and a bunch of spare parts.
What is
Bellinger going to be? And again, they could have still got Paul Goldschmidt. They could have got Goldschmidt for $12 million with Juan Soto. Like, we don't know what the other half of that offseason would have been. Like,
You were talking about Alex Bregman before. If you look at Alex Bregman's spray chart and put it over Yankee Stadium, it doesn't look very good.
No.
Look at Cody Bellinger's spray chart. Put that over Yankee Stadium.
We'll see.
He's a much more productive player, okay?
We will see.
I think he's going to have a very good year.
I hope so. I think he very well might. But, I mean, let's be honest. He's had one very good year in the last four and two atrocious.
Yeah, he's been an up and down player. But also, look,
in the last 4 years he's had
Wrigley. Wrigley can be the type of place that does that.
The two atrocious years were in Dodger Stadium.
Well, if you want to go back that far,
I'm going back the last 4 years. Last year was a down year. Then he had the great year. The 2 years before that got him cut after winning an MVP. Like, they were atrocious seasons where he completely fell apart. Now, shoulder injuries, different things. You can give me a bunch of different reasons for it. And I'm hopeful that Bellinger can be a good player. I am. But they would have had someone playing in those positions. Like, it's not like they would have had nobody. And I'm telling you, I still would take Juan Soto, who is a 900 OPS. Let's see Bellinger get an 800 OPS.
If you keep Juan Soto, you're still the same defensive team that you were last year. At least out in the outfield. If you're going to give any player that kind of money, you probably are starting Caleb Durbin at second base this year. And you don't know what you're going to get out of him.
No, I mean, right. But who's starting at second base right now?
Huh?
Who's starting at second base right now?
Well, right now, that's yet to be determined.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Right now, DJ LeMahieu's in the infield. So,
The offseason's not over yet either.
I understand that, but again, you're calling the offseason over after you get Juan Soto. I don't think that's fair. The offseason wouldn't have just been over with Juan Soto. They would have done. They still had money for other things. If they would have paid him $47 million a year, they still would have had. They still probably have the gold pull. They have the Paul Goldschmidt money. They probably have just about that. So I would take, if you're asking me, considering the starting rotation has the young Rookie of the Year in Luis Gil. You've got other young depth. You've got, obviously, the top of the rotation. The rotation wasn't necessarily the issue last year. Yeah, Max Fried's a great player and a great pitcher, and I hope that he, but we've talked about the issue with starting pitching and the innings and everything. So, like, adding one starting pitcher and Bellinger as opposed to Juan Soto and still probably having Paul Goldschmidt, I would take Paul Goldschmidt and Juan Soto over the offseason the Yankees just had 100 times out of 100.
Well, I mean, adding to a strength is something that nobody saw, and that I think Brian Cashman deserves credit for that.
I 100% agree.
It allowed him to do other things, and that's just what an experienced GM can do for
him. I think Brian Cashman, considering, and I don't even put the Juan Soto thing, when you talk about the Yankee offseason, you can include Juan Soto. When you talk about the Brian Cashman offseason, you can't include Juan Soto. He had nothing to do with it. So what Brian Cashman was able to do this offseason, I agree, it's about as good as I could have hoped for, other than the brief moment where Kyle Tucker seemed available. Other than that brief moment where that seemed like a possibility, I think Brian Cashman did about as good as you could have asked for. I'm not denying that. I'm the Brian Cashman shill. I think Brian Cashman did a great job. And I like this offseason. It's still not having Juan Soto. I don't think I understand what you're saying. But like that, then under the same circumstance, so let's get rid of Juan Soto and bring in three or four guys. Let's get rid of Aaron Judge and bring in three or four guys. And then we'll attack a regular season with a bunch of solid players throughout the lineup, and then depth and a whole bunch of solid players. You need great players. I'm sorry. If I have those two great players in the middle of the lineup, I'll figure out the pieces around them. Maybe Caleb Durbin would have been a good player for them at second base. Or maybe they would have found another smaller piece and put him there. Who knows? Oswaldo Cabrera, you know, at times this year for long stretches had about a 790, 800 OPS. Maybe Oswaldo Cabrera finally becomes a player. Maybe Oswald Peraza becomes something. I don't know. They would have definitely gone young. It would have been different. No Max Fried for sure. And Brian Cashman can tell you now, you know, he wouldn't have done the Devin Williams trade. I'm sorry. For Nestor Cortez, I think he might have done it. And you definitely could have got Paul Goldschmidt. So the Yankees are not, I'm sorry, you can't make a case they're better off without Juan Soto. It's very difficult. If they would have got Kyle Tucker on top of this, or if they would have got Tucker instead of Bellinger, I think you can make an argument. Like if Tucker right now with a left fielder instead of Bellinger, and they did everything else the same, then you have a very compelling case. In fact, I probably agree with you. But Bellinger's too much of a... Is it possible if Bellinger has an MVP-type season like he did with Los Angeles, or the season he had 2 years ago, and he hits 35 home runs and drives in 110 runs and hits, you know, 280 and has an OPS of 890, and Fried pitches to his ability, and Devin Williams has 35 to 40 saves, and everything works out, then yes, okay. Then you can tell me the team is better. As in the moment on paper, looking at the season, knowing there's ups and downs from everybody, and someone will have a bad year and a good year and a, you know, up and down year, and I'm sorry. Going into the season, it's very difficult for me to tell you they are, without question, better than they were last year with a top three hitter and a guy who performed in the postseason. Because getting better means winning more games, and they'd have to win. They'd have to get to the World Series to win more games. So in the World Series, a guy who hit the home run to send them there is gone. And we got Bellinger there instead. And you're giving me, well, this park's tough. You know, if you look at the layout over the Wrigley Field versus Yankee Stadium, you know who doesn't give a damn what stadium he plays in? Do you know what hitter it doesn't matter where the hell he's playing? Juan Soto. It doesn't matter what stadium you put Juan Soto in. He's going to hit you 35 home runs. He's going to hit you 280. He's going to drive in 100 runs. And he's going to have an on-base percentage damn near 400. And I don't care what ballpark he plays in. But, you know, when it comes to Bellinger and Bregman, oh, well, you know, and this and that. And, you know, I'd rather have the guy I don't worry about what ballpark he's hitting in, which way the wind's blowing. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. More of your phone calls next. We'll be right back. All right, 233. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Open the show with the Jets. We've done a little baseball here. I wanted to just say something about the Giants, too, because, you know, obviously, with the firing of Antonio Pierce as the head coach of the Oakland Raiders and Shane Bowen, and his uncertainty in the Giants, coaching tree, or, you know, with his, it sounded like the owner in one of the many things he had to say the other day at his press conference. Didn't like the defense. Didn't like the defense. Didn't like teams going up and down the field. Shane Bone had a rough year one. I think there's a very good chance he's out as defensive coordinator for the New York Giants, who will be going through their third coordinator now, third defensive coordinator in 3 years. And so I've seen a lot of like, oh, you know, Antonio Pierce would be a great defensive coordinator for the New York Giants. I wouldn't be so fast to say so. I love Antonio Pierce. He was a great middle linebacker for them. Helped win a champ. Obviously, was great. Helped win a championship. Great player. I honestly, I don't know if I'd bring him in to be the defensive coordinator. And it's not to say he's not qualified necessarily. You know, he was at the NFL level. He went from linebacker coach right to head coach, interim head coach. Like, it's not like he's been a coordinator. Now, he's been assistant head coach and coordinators at Arizona State at the college level. But at the NFL level, you know, sometimes when you hire a interim head coach, you go with the, you don't go with coordinators like the Jets did this year with Ulbrich, because you don't want to mess with your defense, you don't, or your offense. You don't want to spread that coach too thin. You don't want to make that kind of move as well as getting rid of a head coach. Now, theoretically, you've changed your head coach and you've changed your coordinator. So it's a lot. So you hire the linebacker coach. You hire someone to come in and kind of be the leader of it all. And like, and I think Antonio Pierce did a decent job as the interim. I don't know how, I don't think he did a very good job this year as the head coach necessarily. But he's never been a coordinator at the NFL level. Now, he's a smart player. He was the leader of the defense, the play caller of the defense. I'm not saying he's incapable of doing it. I just don't think it's a slam dunk just because he was the middle linebacker here, because he was a head coach in the NFL, that it would make a an easy transition into being a defensive coordinator. Again, they just went through two in 2 years. Like, and obviously Brian Daboll, who will be, apparently, if you listen to the owner, coaching for his life again, I mean, is he going to want to go to someone inexperienced who's never been a coordinator before? Even if he's been a head coach, he's never been a coordinator. He's been a linebacker's coach and a head coach at the NFL level. That's it. Like, I would want to get someone a little bit more experienced, someone who's done the job before, someone, you know, who's called defense. I mean, again, I don't think he called the defensive plays. I don't know the inner workings of the Raiders. I wouldn't suspect he did. Certainly not as an interim head coach. So I don't think that's as much of a slam dunk as you think. And I mean, there's a good chance they're not going to have an offensive coordinator too. And I find the offensive coordinator, Mike Kafka, interesting, because Kafka again is getting head coaching opportunities and interviews, and he's been getting them since his first year at the New York Giants. Like, he's gonna interview for the Saint and Bear job. Like, so this, and it's just puzzling to me. And not to knock Mike Kafka, I mean, I think he's been sort of mistreated, if anything. I mean, it's one of the failings of this head coach. What happened to him last year? Not this particular year, but last year when he was giving him the play calling and taking it away, and apparently very difficult to work for, and yelling at him in the headset and not providing help, just being, you know, just angry. And then this year they took the play calling away from him. So, I mean, I don't mean this to be disrespectful to Mike Kafka, because I'm sure he's a good coach, and clearly he got head coaching. This is going to be the third consecutive year. Third, after the first year with the Giants, after last year, and now after this year, he is getting interviews to be head coach in the NFL. So he's either doing these, he must be excellent in these meetings. Because I got to tell you, I'm not, what exactly is he doing with the New York Giants that makes him a candidate to be a head coach? Because this year, they took his play calling away from him. He's an offensive coordinator who's not calling the plays. And he's not doing it for the Kansas City Chiefs. He's not doing it for a successful offense. He's not doing it for McVay. He's not doing it for a team that scored a lot of points. He's, you know, it's one of the most inept offenses in the NFL this year. So, and again, I'm not trying to disrespect Mike Kafka. I'm curious what would make the Bears and what would make the Saints want to interview a coordinator who doesn't call plays for one of the worst offenses in the game. What exactly about Mike Kafka makes him worthy of head coaching interviews? Now, after year one, I got it. Year one, new hotshot coordinator came along with the kind of a hotshot coordinator taking over, worked closely with Brian Daboll. He won coach of the year. They figured out how to stop Daniel Jones from turning the ball over. They scored enough points. They go into Minnesota, win a road playoff game. All right, Mike Kafka. Little, you know, he's got a little fire to his name. He's got something to him there. He's a little hotshot coordinator. First year, did this thing with the New York Giants. They've been failing for years. He comes in, figures out Daniel Jones, blah, blah, blah. Fine. After last year, okay, they got something out of Tommy DeVito. You know, he gave some good interviews the year before in his first go-round. But after this year, why would anyone want to talk to Mike Kafka? Like, he must be excellent in the meeting. He must give an incredible interview. Because again, they took his job away from him. Now, I'm not saying he's not important in the scheming and working throughout the week, but Mike Kafka is a offensive coordinator who doesn't call plays and his offense doesn't score touchdowns. God bless him. I hope he gets hired. And I feel bad for him, too. And again, this is like they took away his play calling. And I understood why, because Brian Daboll couldn't, you know, sit there and not, be upset on the headset. To me, it was one of two things: change the way you coach or just take over the play calling so you don't have to. And I was fine with him playing over the play calling. Heading into the year, I don't think he did a very good job of it. They don't score points. But I mean, I felt bad for Mike Kafka. This guy's going to regret not being able to land one of these jobs because now he's friggin' they neutered him. They took away his play calling and the offense sucks. You could say goodbye. He's going to have to go somewhere else and prove it again as an offensive coordinator. And no, he's turned around. He's got the Saints and the Bears, which you could argue the Bears is one of the better jobs all available right now. I mean, the ownership is a little shaky, but Chicago, young quarterback, some weapons around him. A defense that, you know, didn't quite perform as well this year, but played very well last year. I mean, it's not a terrible job. It's a pretty damn good job. So, I just found that funny. So, the two coordinators of the New York Giants are very much up in the air. Because I don't know if Kafka's going to want to stay after getting, you know, his play calling taken away from him. And I think they might fire Shane Bowen. And I don't think Antonio Pierce is a fit for that. And I'm surprised Mike Kafka's getting head coaching interviews after losing his play calling duty for a terrible offense. 888-808-1019. Let's get back to the calls. Gary in East Meadow. What's up, Gary?
How you doing? So two things. One, since you're a Yankee fan, I think Fubo would solve your problem. Fubo doesn't have SNY, so you wouldn't watch the Mets. But since you're a Yankee fan, they still have the S and they have MSD.
Yes, I know. I mean, I'd have to cut the cable, which I don't know how much Fubo TV costs, but
you can get a basic package for like $80 a month.
So I got to cut my cable, which is I could do. Not to get into all my personal life, but
right. No.
She lives with us right. In the house. She has her own side of the house,
right.
And she's gone through this and she likes the cable and she doesn't want me to get rid of it. So, but I got to figure, but that is an option. Fubo TV definitely has it. And of course, I believe as far as I know, even with Optimum, if I buy the Gotham app, then I would have both MSG and
yes.
And that you can get, I believe you can get just MSG for $30 a month. So, I mean, like, that's.
Yeah, you get MSG and Yes. You know, it's the Gotham
MSG
app,
and Yes for 40, just one of, I think I could just get MSG for 30.
And then the other thing is, and now, admittedly, I'm a Mets fan, so I admit that before I say what I'm about to say, is Reggie Jackson's number should not have been retired.
I agree with you, yeah.
You know, I mean, like, it, you know, he had basically two great seasons out of six.
And it's only 6 years. He wasn't. He didn't come up a Yankee.
If all 6 years had been Don Mattingly years, maybe. But 77 was great. 78 was great. The other four.
Yeah, I mean, again. And it wasn't even so much that he's not a great player. He's a Hall of Fame player and a great player. I'm not trying to knock Reggie Jackson as the player. We're talking about specifically retired numbers. I mean, he played 10 years with Oakland. He played more games for the California Angels than he did the New York Yankees. And you don't even associate him with that team almost at all unless you're a Naked Gun fan. In which case, he must kill the queen. But he played more games. Five years, played more games. Now, he was a far better player with the Yankees, but played the same amount of time in California that he did with the New York Yankees. And I don't know if they were all bad. He was an all-star every single year. 77, he does... 77, he's 32-110. 78, he's 27-97. 79, he's 29-89. 1980, he had a great year. 41 home runs, 111 RBIs, and he hit 300. I mean, he had that's a Hall of Fame season. That's a great year. So he had a great year in 1980. And then 1981, he only played 94 games. But so he had more than just, he had one, two, three, four. He had four still Reggie years. 79's a down year. Played 131 games, but 1980 he was, you know, he led the league in home runs and had 111 runs batted in. He hit 300 and had a 995 OPS. I mean, it's one of the better years of his career OPS wise. So yeah, listen, I'm not trying to say he wasn't a great player when he was a New York Yankee. Great player. Not even argue that. Great, great player. Great postseason player. Mr. October. Three home runs, clincher in Game 6, 1977. I get it. Deserves all the accolades. I'm just saying for only playing 5 years with the Yankees. Like, I 5 years, I know it's two World Series, but... I think you have to be you either have to be a homegrown Yankee for those 5 years, be one of the best players in baseball and win championships. Like 5 years is just not enough. Not to have your number retired. And not for the New York Yankees. Like, unfortunately, that's part of it too. Like, for other franchises, you come to that team, you're their best player, you win two World Series, which for them might be the only two, or two of three, or two of four, or two of five, or whatever. And you reshape that organization for years to come, okay. But it's the New York Yankees. They have the most, they have, 27 World Series championships. He played for 5 years. They've got, 20 some odd retired numbers. Reggie Jackson didn't have to have his number retired. But again, not trying to make a big deal out of it. Someone just called up and was talking about retired numbers for whatever reason. I just, and the same thing again. I would also say that I don't know if necessarily number 9 needs to be retired with the New York Yankees or number 10. I really don't think Roger Maris has to have his number retired. He won a couple of MVPs. He hit the, obviously, 61 home runs, World Series champion. But if you look at it, he played He played 7 years, so it's two more than Reggie. He played 7 years with the Yankees, the most. He played more years with the Yankees than any other team. That makes me feel a little bit better about it. Had three great years, 60, 61, 62, and then really didn't. And then fell off a cliff, kind of, 23 and 53 and 63, 26 and 71 and 60 and 64. Yeah, I feel better about Roger Maris than I guess I do about, I don't know, it doesn't matter. But I'm just saying, there's a lot of retired numbers. I wish it was a little bit more elite. As we get ready to retire David Wright's number, and listen, David Wright for the Mets, he's one of their best position players of all time. And this isn't trying to knock the Mets. They don't have the history. Who knows? From this point on, after you signed Juan Soto and stole him away from the New York Yankees, I know you might not like that terminology. I know Paulie Rosenberg doesn't, but whatever. You signed Juan Soto. He was a Yankee. Now he's a Met. You have the richest owner in baseball and the youngest, smartest, sexiest executive in the sport in David Stearns. And from this moment on, you are going to dwarf the Yankees. That might be true. But currently, as we sit, David Wright might not deserve to have his number retired if he was a New York Yankee, but for the New York Mets, he absolutely should, and should be a good day. And this is what part of David Stearns' plan to get the Met fan back on board, stop thinking that every other day the other shoe's going to drop, start believing in the franchise, having faith in the franchise, believing in the ability of their success. And that's why part of it is winning. Part of it is the dynamic between the Yankees and the Mets. And that's why Juan Soto was so important. And that's why he pulled out all the stops. And that's why Juan Soto got a suite and Juan Soto got, you know, whatever else, whether, you know, it ends up being 100% accurate that his mother's getting, you know, clothing or whatever the case may be. They did everything they could for him because they deemed that as not only a great player, not only at his age, not only as someone who can lead them for the next 15 years, one of the top three hitters in the sport and can change their franchise. But because he was a Yankee, it changes the dynamic of the two teams in the city. And that's part of it. And along with giving you a lot of the stuff that you want, the Tom Seaver statue. You know, I said that the other day and someone was like, do you know that was in the works with the Wilpons? Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. I don't know. It was revealed under Steve Cohen's era. He brings you the statue. He brings you the alternate jerseys you like. He's retiring numbers you like. He's having old timers day again. Like, this is all part of it. It's all part of the great Cohen plan. And now all that's left to do is win. And that's still needs to happen. And we could talk all we want about Pete Alonso, and I still don't know if I trust the pitching. And that's why I think the Tanner Scott news, if they are legitimately talking to Tanner Scott, if you're going to, now he's going to get $20 million a year. And so that's a pricey back end of the bullpen. But if Diaz can get back to what he was 2 years ago before the knee injury, and last year he had his moments, and he struggled and the sticky stuff and everything else. And then he came back and he rallied and had his moments, even late in the season, blowing saves. But, you know, I would still call him a very capable closer that I'm confident in. But, I mean, if he has the type of season he had 2 years ago and you add Tanner Scott to the back end of that bullpen, I mean, you are talking about two of the best arms and, you know, two of the best relievers in all of baseball in the back end of the Met bullpen. That's the kind of thing that I think the Mets need, to be totally honest with you. Because I think they have options instead of Pete Alonso, and I don't think they want to sign him. Maybe I'm crazy. All the reports are that it's most likely even Passan, who is without question the most credible guy out there, or at least I consider him that. And he's out there saying that it's likely that there's going to be a reunion, could be on a shorter-term deal. We got the news that Boris has thrown out the ridiculous Prince Fielder contract given to him by Detroit, 9 years, $210 million. Like, Pete Alonso's going to come anywhere near that. It's laughable. And I'll tell you, Boris is having a rough go of it. I'm sorry. I know he signed the Juan Soto contract, and I hate when people say this about either Brian Cash or anything else. Like, anybody could have done that. I could have done that. I could have got Juan Soto a lot of money. I don't know the first thing about contracts, but I could have got Juan Soto a lot of money. So I don't want to dismiss it, but every other free agent over the last 2 years that Scott Boras has tried to help, you know, every one of his clients has had a rough go of it. Maybe Snell this year now after the rough go of it last year. Snell got a good contract early on, and Chapman did sign an extension with the Giants midseason last year, but in their free agency period, their big expected big contract free agency period, he's been on a stretch. He's been on a streak of unsuccessful runs at it, man, other than Juan Soto. And right now, I mean, if Pete Alonso thinks he's holding firm to some pie in the sky, nine-year, $210 million contract, he's out of his mind. And so while I do think there's a chance of a short-term contract, I don't love that for Pete. I don't think he performed very well under the stress of trying to get another contract or, you know, bet on himself and you're asking him to do it again. I do honestly think that affected Pete. And that press conference, you know, in August or whatever it was when he was talking about, hey, he was an all-star and, hey, I'll take this year and all that, like trying to sell himself as a free agent. That's what it felt like. It felt like, wow, well, now really it's clearly this thing is affecting him. His upcoming free agent was impacting him. And now a short-term deal, a three-year deal with an opt-out after one, kind of the same thing. It won't be exactly the same because he'd have an opportunity to be a Met for 3 years no matter what. But I do think a short-term deal like that is more palatable for the Mets organization than any other organization who's going to have to give up picks. You know, you give Pete Alonso 1 year, you let Pete Alonso opt out after 1 year, you pay Pete Alonso $30 million for 1 year, and you had to give up a draft pick. You better win. So I do think a shorter-term deal works best with the Mets, who don't have to lose a pick in signing him, but I have a sneaking suspicion the Mets don't want him. I don't think they wanted Jacob DeGrom. I don't think they want Pete. I think they offered him a three-year, $90 million contract because they felt they had to, and that's it. And maybe he'll come and take that $3 million contract if they don't take it off the table, but I honestly think in Stern's heart of hearts, he'd rather Pete Alonso go somewhere else. You could bring up Beatty and play third for a year. You could figure something out at first base. You scored a lot of runs last year. You just added Juan Soto. You have multiple first basemen, young. You have a superstar in Japan possibly coming over to be a first baseman next year. You got, obviously, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. going to be a free agent first baseman next year. Those are the kind of long-term free agent contracts for the younger player that they're interested in and their owner can afford. Why pay Pete Alonso aging on a downturn if you view it that way? For this 1 year? When you just got Juan Soto and you scored that many runs last year and you have multiple infielders in your farm system that you've been cultivating here and paying for. And like, I don't think the Mets want him back. And I think there's a strong argument that it makes a lot of sense. And I'm telling you right now, and if you go bolster the bullpen, I think they're better off doing that. I think they're better off going give Tanner Scott $20 million a year, having a devastating back end of the bullpen, sign some other bullpen arms, and rely on bullpen pitching, the top of your rotation with Senga and Minaya, and relying on Juan Soto to help the offense pick up some of the pieces lost by Pete Alonso. I think that's where the Mets are thinking right now. I really do. I think Pete Alonso is going to sign somewhere else. And I think there's options. I think the Angels, which I would feel bad for Pete because Seattle and Anaheim are where players' careers go to die lately, unless you're a pitcher for Seattle. And I think the Giants need a splash in some way. They don't need a nine-year, $210 million splash for Pete Alonso. But when that number starts to come down eventually, I think the San Francisco Giants have to do something, have someone take their money, bring some kind of buzz to that building. I think you could see them offer a contract. I think you'd see the Angels were talking about Pete Alonso could offer him a contract. I think there are several teams that give him that 3 for $90 and that Pete won't feel insulted by. 888-808-1019. Quick break, come back. 3 hours down, two more to go on our five-hour midnight ride as we take you all the way to the warm-up show at 5 a.m. Quick break. Marco, we'll come back with your phone calls next.
Hey, guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting the NFL playoffs, buckle up. Betting football's hard enough as it is. We're doing the research for you, so listen to Cash the Ticket with Mike Valeni and I. We'll be dropping new episodes for every single playoff game. And that's going to be storylines leading into it, so some good football stuff, but also the betting nuggets you're looking for. Sides, totals, trends, player props, throw those in there too. Pre-game and post-game, we're going to be all over the postseason. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.